right here in the greatest teaching ever given by the greatest teacher who ever lived about the greatest kind of life you and I could possibly have is this set of verses. And what are we going to be talking about today? No, you're wrong. Not that. We're actually going to be talking about the heart. Jesus is going to use everything that he just said to get us to focus on the most central, the most important, the most destiny-deciding thing about us, and it is our hearts. He's going to do it by talking to us about money, about how we give and what we treasure and what we value, and he's going to set in front of us three sets of two choices. And how you choose on each one of these, treasure, storing, visions, and masters, how you choose between each of these will determine if your life is experienced with deep and fulfilling joy or momentary pleasure. If you will experience a purpose that's bigger than just you or simply living for the moment, or if you will experience freedom or shackles. Huge decision that he lays in front of us, and he begins it all by talking about these three things: storing, seeing, and serving. And so for the next few minutes, I'm going to walk through this passage, and I want to show you each of these choices, tell you why they matter so much, and then hopefully all of us today will have the opportunity to respond with faith to what God is actually doing. Because here's the deal. You know how little kids, they start out being really captivated by shiny things? Like we hang little things over their crib or their bassinet or whatever that they can look at that catch their attention. It's always shiny. And I hate to tell you, but we don't evolve much or mature much from there. Just the shininess changes, but we still get captivated by those things. Jesus is going to talk about how we have to train our vision to see what's the most valuable. And when we do that, it shapes our heart to be able to follow the correct master. So let's start in with the beginning here. Where are you storing? He says this, don't store up for yourselves treasure on earth. And he goes through this list of things that can happen to that treasure, moths and mice and thieves. And in that time, when Jesus is teaching, most of people's wealth was found or kept in one of three things. It was either in gold, some kind of precious metal, or it was in grain or food, some kind of some way to be able to feed yourself and others over the future, or it was in clothing. Some of the clothing that was worn was not just a sign of wealth, but it was so valuable that people would use that to accumulate power and leverage. And Jesus at that time is saying, look, this makes sense. There are these little moth creatures that will eat holes in your finest garments. Have you noticed how many of those are around here too? Like, I don't know if it's because of the nice clothes that we have or whatever, but there are those little moths everywhere. We still face this. And then he says, if you put your faith, your trust, your value in grain, well, there's mice and rats that get and eat that. It's decaying and decomposing quickly. And if you choose to place it in gold, well, people can just break in and steal it. In those days, there was like the strong box, this thing where people would place their valuables in it and they would lock it and it would be kind of built into a wall. But the problem is, in those days also, the walls of your home were made of mud. And so a thief literally could dig a hole in the wall, take out all your stuff, and run away. So we came up with all kinds of ways to fix that, right? We got rat poison, we got mothballs, and we got burglar alarms. We're set. What decays our wealth and accumulation now? Deflation, hyperinflation, market collapses, global economic pressures that move in a moment and change everything. We're actually not that much further along than grain, garments, and gold. We just think that somehow there is more confidence or surety in the market. And Jesus is saying to them and to us, you've got to deal with where your heart chases after security. He says, Don't just be unwise about the things that you stack up. Consider that your treasure directs where your heart goes. In fact, you might say it like this, where your money flows, your heart goes. And so he says, look, I'm not prohibiting wealth. Jesus never has a problem with a person earning a lot or making good business decisions that cause them to prosper. He's not against us enjoying the nice things that he gives. Remember, the scriptures tell us that every good thing we have is a gift from God to be enjoyed. It's not that he doesn't want us to have nice stuff. He doesn't want our nice stuff to have us. And he knows that the temptation, just like that little baby reaching for what's shiny, can affect us as well. The first car that I got to buy with my own real money was a Jeep Wrangler, soft top. It was red. It had big tires. I was so cool. I loved that Jeep. But I learned that you don't leave valuable things in your Jeep and you don't lock the doors of a soft top Jeep. Do you know this? Because people just cut through the top and take your stuff. So you got to be wise. And Jesus is saying, be wise with where you're going to put your treasure. And he says this thing that's kind of hard for us to imagine. He goes, instead, store up treasure in heaven. So what is that? Is there some kind of like eternal investment strategy? Jesus, if I do good things now, does that buy me credits in heaven for later? Is that what he's talking about? I don't think so. I think what Jesus is saying is that anything you do that has an eternal impact or effect lays up for you glory in the future. These things that won't pass away, whose effect won't be diminished over time, those are the things that you should grab for, that you should chase after, that you should strategically decide. Store up treasure in heaven. And he understands this common human desire, right? If you look out at culture, every culture that's ever lived, there's always this attempt to take our stuff with us. Have you thought about that? I got to go to Egypt a few years ago and got to see inside some of the Pharaoh's tombs. And we look at that and think, wow, did you know that in King Tut's tomb, they had $750 million worth of gold and jewels? Because they believed in the resurrection after the dead, that one day he was going to need all that wealth, so it's trying to store it up for later. And we look at it and we go, well, that's silly. Until we really do a little dive on our own stuff and like, what are we thinking about most? Where are we letting our affections run? What do we think gives us security? Jesus says, make the right choice into where your money flows, because wherever your money flows, your heart goes. And he's always talking to us about the heart being the central, most important thing in life, right? You remember in Proverbs 4:23, this verse, above all else, guard your heart, for everything that you do flows from it. Jesus knows, God knows, that there are forces always vying for our heart, trying to grab its affection and attention, trying to say that I'm the most important, look at me. And he knows that we have to put correction and protection around our heart to make sure we value the right things. Then he says later, Jesus speaking about the same idea, says a good man brings good things out of the good stored. That somehow we begin to lay up inside even those moments of doing good for the kingdom, whether that is giving a glass of cold water or a meal to someone in need, whether it's a strategic investment in the church, the seminarian fund, your tithe, all of those things begin to actually shape us too. And there's good that comes out of us. Because really, the problem is always a heart issue. Sometimes as parents, I think about how we can miss this. This has happened to you before. You've walked into a room and there are two kids and they're fighting over a toy, you know? I mean, like ready to just murder each other. It's mine, it's mine, it's mine. And you think when you walk in, don't you? You think that you have a behavior problem. But you don't have a behavior problem. The problem that you have is you've got two slimy little sinners with bad hearts. That it's not just they're saying who's mine, because the way we address it is from a justice perspective. We say, what? Who had it first? Which one of you was the fastest to grab it, or which one of you owned it? We turn this into a behavior and a justice problem. The real issue is the heart. It's somebody saying, I am willing for you to suffer as long as I'm happy. I want what I want, and I don't care what it does to you. That's a heart problem. And Jesus is after those kind of heart problems with us. And he knows that the medicine is the way we handle our wealth and money. So store up for yourselves things that last. And then he says this, what are you seeing? Not just where are you storing, but what do you see? And I want to spend a minute on this section, this vision, because I think this is key for us to understanding how to train our heart to go after the right things. He says, the eye is the lamp of the body. It's the vehicle through which light is going to come in. It's a window. It's some way that light gets transferred from out there in here. And he says something that makes a lot of sense to us. If your eyes are healthy, your whole body is full of light. But if your eyes are unhealthy, you're full of darkness. How many of you have been to an eye doctor in the last year or so? Right? Whenever you go to an eye doctor, what is their goal? What are they doing? They're trying to figure out what are the limits of your vision. For some, it's because there's a structural problem. For some, there's damage. But every time, the eye doctor is trying to determine how healthy are your eyes. And a healthy eye is simply this. It's an eye that can receive and direct light to the right place. So every single one of us, whatever our issue would be, like for instance, say that you're nearsighted. People who are nearsighted usually are born that way. And the idea is that you can see things really clearly up close, but we have trouble seeing in the distance. And you might not have ever experienced it, so I got this little thing to show you what it feels like. You're driving down the road nearsighted, you can see, but the more that that disease comes on your eyes, stuff gets blurry in the distance. Here's what I think. I think that every physical reality has a spiritual connection. And I think that we're all born spiritually nearsighted. That we all kind of choose to focus on just what's right here. What's right now? What's my instant gratification? What do I feel and want? We have to actually be trained to see and to think long term. This is what Jesus has been about in this whole Sermon on the Mount. Let me help you to have eyes that can see not just today and tomorrow or even your earthly life. Let me let you see into eternity. There's light that comes. So doctors, eye doctors, will address our eye issues with corrective and protective lenses. So like this one. Another one, there's an issue called presbyopia, which, by the way, is my favorite of all the eye diseases. It's way better than Methodistopia or Baptistopia or any of those. Presbyopia is when the lens in your eye stops. It becomes not flexible. It becomes rigid and hard, and it stops directing light correctly. So you start to see things up close become blurry. In the first service, there were lots of people that answered this one, maybe not so much here, but have any of you ever heard the phone ring and answered your remote control on accident? Right? This is presbyopia. It happens to all of us. You begin to look at it and go, I don't know what that button is for. Our eyes shift. The vision, because of the inability to direct light, causes us problems. I think we all develop spiritual presbyopia. Here's what I mean. We don't see the thing that's right up close to us. Sometimes, as we get older, we don't see kingdom opportunities. We don't see needs right in front of us the way we did when we were younger. Have you ever noticed how a kid, like if a kid sees someone hurting on the playground, a child doesn't ask questions about, well, what did they do to deserve that? Well, did they go through the right channels and make the right decisions? Is it their parents' fault that they're in this situation or their own? What about their response? They don't do that. They just help. As we get older, sometimes we begin to not see so clearly the opportunity right in front of us to be the hands and feet of God, to be able to meet someone's need. We start to get fuzzy on the kingdom. And then there's macular degeneration. Some of you have experienced this. This is when your eye begins, the center of your vision starts to go black. It goes dark, and it makes it really difficult to see people's faces. This is something that happens over time. And in all of these, what does the eye doctor do? They prescribe the right lenses, you know? So you got reading glasses for presbyopia. I have to use these at home. I try not to do them with you, but I just have to make the font 18 on my iPad so that I can get through a sermon. But sometimes you need that. And then where we live, this is particularly important. I had no idea how important sunglasses are until I moved to Southern California. Because the UV can damage your eyes to the point that light won't get through. It's really bright coming at you, and if you're not careful, you won't be able to see well in the future. You know what this reminds me of spiritually? Is back to those shiny things. We almost have to protect ourselves from constantly being enamored with the bright, shiny this and that and next and better and bigger and more. And oh, they got it, so I need it. It's protective lenses as well as corrective. And God gave us a prescription for kingdom vision. Knowing that we were going to enter into this space as we tried to learn to follow him, he says, I'm going to give you a prescription to fix your vision. And it's three things. It's all throughout Scripture. The first is the tithe. The tithe is the way that he begins to correct our vision by saying the first 10% of all that you make comes back to me. That way you are forced to never think that everything you have is yours. It's a heart corrective. It's to say that I could choose to spend all of this however I want, but God, I'm trusting that you'll do more with me and 90% than I could do with 100%. A lot of people don't like to talk about the tithe, but it was built to also fund the church and the ministry to take care of things. So God says, first, I'm going to give you the tithe, and then I'm going to give you this heart of generosity. I'm going to ask you to give on top of that. When you see needs, you move towards them. Whenever you find ministry opportunity that this could really change someone's life or direction, you invest in that. We have opportunities to shape where our money goes or where our money flows so we can direct where our heart goes. This has happened to you before too. How many things do you get in the mail that are asks for you to support some nonprofit? Right? How many do you throw away, put in the recycle every week? Do you remember what any of those were? No. But some of you support Project Hope Alliance. You choose to direct your money there, or Royal Family Kids, or one of our other partners, or one that you love. And then as you send your money to it, you start wondering, how they doing? I want to read about it. I want to hear the stories. Your heart follows where your money goes. So God gives us tithing, gives us generosity, and then the most important and the hardest of all, contentment. Choose to receive whatever I have blessed you with as a gift and as enough. You just relax in what I've given you. One of the things that happens to us is sometimes when we try this, especially in the early stages, when we're kind of immature in the way we handle our money and our wealth, our treasure, we start trying to make little movements toward God, and then like the part of us that's still the old man, it kind of pulls us back. Like, Martin Lloyd-Jones tells this great story of this farmer, and he comes into his kitchen, he looked at his wife, and he's like, this is the best. Honey, our favorite cow had two calves, and they are going to be worth so much because this was the good bloodline. These are good calves. One of them was roan-colored, beautiful, and one of them was a black Angus. I don't know if that actually works. I just made that up. But they've got these two colors, and you know what we're going to do? We're gonna take them, and one day when they get old, we're going to sell them, and we're going to keep the money from one, and we're going to give the money to God from the other one. We're going to choose to let one be God's cow and one to be ours. And she goes, well, which one is which? And he's like, oh, it's okay. We'll just figure it out later. A few months later, he comes in the house. He looks really down, looks at his wife, and he says, you're never going to believe it. God's cow died. And isn't that kind of what we do? Without predetermining what's his, we always end up saying, Lord, I sure would like to help, but you know, the car had problems this month. Jesus says, let me give you corrective prescriptions to help you know how to train your heart to lay up the right treasure for me. It's always a heart issue. Where are you storing? What are you seeing? And then finally, who are you serving? Because this is what happens. The things that we find to be valuable, then it affects our vision, our heart goes after it, and pretty soon we find out that we are a servant of something. And Jesus again gives us two choices. It's either him or it's anything else. It's the only options that you get. He says, no one can serve two masters. And I know some of you are thinking, like, I have a side hustle right now. This is the gig economy. What are we talking about? But he's not talking about employment. He's talking about what it means to be a slave. You're either going to hate one and love the other, or you're going to despise one and love the other. You can't serve two masters. You can only have one. Undivided loyalty, singleness of mind, vision that's focused on me or on something else. And then he says you can't serve both God and money. So we translate that word money. The actual word is mammon. Some of you in your translations may have heard that before. And mammon is this Aramaic word that just means anything that you put confidence in. Like whatever you find security and hope in. So it's kind of like an idol. Anything that you're looking to give you what actually only God can give you. And for some people, it's wealth and accumulation. For some people, it's name and reputation. For some, it's power. For some, it's my addictions. It's whatever it is that I place on the top of my list. Jesus says, you can't serve me and that. Only room for one of us on the throne. Which is why he's given us all this corrective and protective prescription to say, I'm going to keep your heart from falling prey, because, and you know this, some of you have lived it. You wake up with fear, with gripping anxiety about money. And one of the reasons is because it's your confidence. You've made it your security. You're not living free and open-handed. We're still clutching and grasping like that little baby onto the shiny thing. And Jesus says, I want you to be free of that. And the way that you're going to break the back of the money monster is through my prescription. So today we have before us this chance, this choice. Where are you going to find your confidence and your security? What's funny is that to get to this place, to make the right choice, it takes more than just information. Like I'm trying to give you that today, but it's going to require something else. Yesterday, my daughter's school had their spring play, spring musical. It's Frozen. And there's a line in Frozen that I think captures this so well. It's when Anna's had to be taken to the trolls to get healed because of the ice that's forming in her heart, which is a spiritual metaphor in itself. And one of the trolls says, I can persuade the head, but the heart's only changed by love. That's what Jesus is after here. You're not going to think your way into serving only God versus mammon. You got to train your heart. So here's what he gives us. He gives us the picture of what it looks like to be a fully generous, fully trusting in God human. And he does it the night before he goes to the cross in the Garden of Gethsemane, sitting there with all the weight and pressure. I know, God, what you want is this, but I really don't want to have to go through that. I don't want to have to take my hands off of the wheel. Is there any other way? Even Jesus in that moment. But ultimately, he submits. And he says, whatever it costs, whatever it feels like, however much it takes, I will submit to your will. And then he goes and performs the greatest act of love and generosity that we've ever seen. And he says, you can trust a God like this. You can allow me to sit on the throne of your heart. I'm trustworthy because I don't bring shackles. I bring freedom. This is why money is such a big deal. It's why Jesus talked about it all the time. It's why some of you are like, I cannot believe I tried church again and he's talking about money. But I told you I'm not. We're talking about the heart today. It's just that money is the way to figure out your heart disease. See, because it can show up in either way. For some people, it's like they're really clear. It's out in the open. They're materialist. It's like, I just need more, 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 consume, grab more. How many of you love that little dopamine hit when you hit, you look at what could be delivered to your doorstep on Amazon Prime tomorrow morning, and you just are stressed or anxious or whatever, and it's like, yes. And it feels good for a few minutes, doesn't it? That's one way. materialism. The other way is the person who just says, nope, I'm holding it all, I'm hoarding, I'm grasping, I don't know what's enough, it'll never be enough, I'm afraid, I'm scared. A miser or a materialist, either one has made money their master. It may look different on the outside, but the prescription is the same. And because of that, because money can be either really hazardous or really helpful, we've got to make a decision. And the decision that we make is this: it's not how much you make. Some of you make unbelievable salaries. You've done great in business. God has blessed you and favored you and influenced you, and He's given you a mind that came up with an incredible product and energy and health, and you make a ton of money. And Jesus is like, that's great. The question is not how much we make. The real question is how much we keep. Where your treasure is, there your heart will be also. So I thought, how do you end a message like this that's totally kind of pulled on our hearts? Some of you, your hands are sweaty right now because you're thinking about this, and that's good that you're thinking about it. And some of you are frustrated at me, and you're already like thinking about how you're going to have roast pastor for lunch after this, and I get that too. So I thought, what's the best way for us to kind of end and deal with it? And it hit me. A second offering. Just playing. I'm just joking. Totally kidding. But that would have been really funny. I think the best thing to do is for us to just kind of pause and say, God, can you show me? Can you give me your vision for a moment? Like, where in my life am I holding security, confidence in something other than you? And then let's just pray and ask Him to kind of loosen our grip. And then you all can go from here and we can put it into practice. And when you do, and when I do, we'll find there's more joy, there's more freedom in living this way than we ever thought was possible. So can you join me in prayer for just a moment? Father, you're so good. You know us. You know what we struggle with. You know how we can so much still kind of be like those little versions of ourselves, just grabbing what's shiny, saying mine, fearful that we might not have enough. You know all of that. And in your goodness, you give us these really practical things. God, I know that for people in this room, for some people, they've been walking and taking this prescription for decades, and I'm so grateful because our church is different because of that. Your kingdom is bigger because of that. And for some of us, this is hard. And we recognize that it's actually a heart thing. Because logically, it could make sense, but there's just a piece of us that wants to hold back. And so, God, I ask that in your mercy and your grace, you would relax our grip, that you'd help us on whatever it is to release the grip. God, in fact, right now, as we just pause for a moment, would you speak to people in the room? Would you show us what our mammon is? God, we're sorry for the places where we've treasured something above you, let something or someone else be on the throne. And we want to do better. We want to find this life that you said is there. We want to live wisely. So I pray that you would unleash, through your grace, this congregation. Set us free. Set us free to do what you said. Set us free to believe what you showed. Set us free to live lives worthy of your vision for us and for your world. Thank you, Jesus. We pray this in your name. Amen.